98 of Divided by Werewolves.
Coming in hot.
Coming in hot. I got to say, like, we talked a bunch of shit before the show started, which we're all fired up. But one thing I wanted to talk about, and this really pisses me off, is these studio closures that we heard about this past week, where, like, Arcane and fucking the folks that made Hi-Fi Rush and was it Tango Studios, whatever. Obviously people losing their job. Like, Redfall was a disaster. And Redfall was a disaster because they asked the studio to make a game that they don't make. Like, that's basically, you know, you asking the people who made Dishonored and Prey to make some weird live service vampire game. Like, no, that's not what they do.
Right.
But here's the thing that bothers me the most about that stuff. And it's the same thing, and you got to bear with me, because it's going to take a minute to make a point. Mm-hmm. So often, it's been my experience over the past, like, 20 years, that large, systematic changes are oftentimes getting pushed on individuals who don't have the power to necessarily make a change to the thing. And it just came about, like one of the big thing I always think about is, like, oh, man, you got to recycle. You got to save energy. You got to, you know, like, separate your plastic. Da, 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 and are you breaking down your cardboard boxes? Are you, you know, doing this and then blah, 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 and saving at the pump? Da, 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 and it's just like it doesn't fucking make a dent in climate change when, like, five companies are responsible for, like, 75% of the output that's causing climate change in the first place or whatever. You know, it's like, and I thought about that in the case of these studios, because what do you hear, right? Like, oh, if you want us to make games like this, then you got to buy these games, right? Like, if you want us, if you don't show up to see this movie, then they won't make movies like this. And it's like, Hi-Fi Rush was critically acclaimed and sold well, and they still shut that shit down. And it doesn't make a fucking lick of difference who bought it. And to be perfectly honest, I don't even know if it had been doubled in sales if they would have. At some point in time, somebody in that boardroom looked at the games division of Microsoft and went, you're not making enough. We gotta cut this shit out, and we gotta go all in on the safe bets, which I don't even know if Starfield would be considered a safe bet at this point. But it's like, and it just pisses me off that this idea that they push so much of this shit on the consumer to spend their money and make their choices in their time and their effort, because they're the one, you know, if you don't do X, we can't make Y. And it's not, those decisions are entirely out of the control of the people making the thing, potentially, and the people consuming the thing. And we see it so many times, right? Where it's like, you know, some director is like, well, you know, if you don't come see this movie, we can't make more of them. That's not on me. That's
right.
That is a, someone at a studio made a, had a number in mind that they thought you needed to get to on the weekend your movie came out, whether it was realistic or not. And it was an arbitrary number based on bullshit. And right. Then if your movie doesn't hit that number, then the shareholders get pissed off and they decide how things are. Then the studio or the media conglomerate that owns the studio in the first place needs to now bring shareholder value, and they're seeing growth, but they're not, because the street said they'd have 10% growth and they're only having 9% growth. Somehow that makes a fucking billionaire be slightly less of a billionaire. So now that movie doesn't get made. That doesn't have anything to fucking do with me. It doesn't have anything to do with you. It is decisions made by ghouls who don't care about art or about creativity. Right. They only care about numbers. And we see that so many times where it's like, oh, If you want real change, you have to get out and vote. For who? For the people who don't fucking change things in the first place?
You're
You know how
right.
you get real change? You pull every one of those fuckers out on the lawn, and you go down the line, and you show their brains the light of day, and you fucking start over. Like, I'm not saying NSA, I am not advocating for murdering the anyone. All I'm saying is that there's change and then there's change. And like this fucking mealy mouth bullshit, oh, I can't do anything. But if you want change, get out and vote. Why? You can't do anything.
Right.
Why are you putting this on me? You're the fucking people holding all the levers of power, and you're pulling those levers to make things great still for the people who have everything great to fucking
It's
begin
already
with.
great.
Exactly. Right. So like you come out with Hi-Fi Rush and people buy it and they love it and they get press and they get written up well and you still shut that shit down. Who's gonna trust you at this point? Like
That.
Microsoft needs to figure out what the fuck they're doing, because what they're not doing is making games or giving anyone a reason to invest in their platform, and that's both on the consumer side and on the creative side. And it's so frustrating to see. Like, because there are ways, like, you can support independent artists, you can support independent filmmakers, you can support independent musicians
Yeah, we fucking
directly
do it all the
from them.
time. Like,
Right. Go to see them on tour, buy independent games where you're cutting out the middleman, like maybe, and that's why, like, when Bungie got bought by Sony, I was like, I mean, I kind of get it, but at the same time, it's just like, it just doesn't feel like the safety net it did before, right? It's a safety
right.
net in the same way that, like, in Revenge of the Jedi, when they all got caught up in that net because Chewbacca was hungry, I mean, technically they were safe and in a net, but also,
Right,
next
right.
thing you know, they're over the fire, And it's just, but it just really pissed me off. And I mean, obviously, the studio closure, people losing their jobs, but this idea of these corporate decisions. Like, I wish they would just come right out and say, it really doesn't matter what you buy. Like, it really doesn't matter. We're going to make our decisions regardless. So here's the thing we made. If you want to play it, play it. If you don't want to play it, fucking don't. But at the end of the day, don't think that what you do has any makes any difference,
Right.
right? And be honest. And then the studios where, Supergiant, they can, or Larian, right? They can say, yeah, we're independent. It absolutely matters.
Right.
It matters that you buy our stuff. So we try to make good games, and we try to make environments where creative people can flourish. They're not going to go on sale often,
Right, yeah,
and they're
right,
not going
right.
to be on Game Pass, but they're going to be fucking good. And you'll know that the people who made them got the opportunity to make the thing that they wanted to, go home to their families at night, and not fucking burn themselves out. Like that's what I want. That's the label I want on the back of the game. I don't need to know if there's sex or gore or whatever. I want to know what was the average hour work week.
Well, right. And this comes across not just in games, but I think everything, right? It's how many times have we played something or seen something, right? That was made by five people, or whatever, right? Who put their heart into something and against like almost all odds, right? Made something happen because they believed in it. And how many times, even if it's maybe not the most polished thing you've ever played or seen, right? How many times has that shit been more amazing than whatever big studio horse shit that we get fucking fed over and over again, right? I'd so much rather, support that than I would line somebody's fucking pockets who are making these asinine, completely brain dead fucking decisions.
I mean, the only reason I haven't purchased Hades 2 out of early access right now is I know as soon as I get it, I'm going to play the fuck out of it. And the way that my brain works with playing games is if I stop playing it, I tend to forget about it and then never go back to it. And so what I want is a version of the game that is basically done.
Right.
Whether there's more polishing, I don't care. But like once it hits like kind of 1.0, like at that point, I'll
Yeah.
probably pick it up in early access and play it. But I don't want to do it now because if they still have stuff to add and stuff to do, then I'll forget
Right.
to go back to it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I do what I always do. I'll buy it when it hits physical. That's what I do with the first one.
But I mean, it's just so disheartening to see this shit, and it's like,
Hi-Fi Rush is the one that got me because,
what
you
more do you
know,
need?
right, exactly. And even the director guy, right? Did you see that tweet he did?
No.
Because I don't know, they said I guess one of the higher ups at Xbox said something about wanting these studios to deliver games that were critically acclaimed and won
Oh, yeah.
awards and this, that, and the third. And like then they shut those guys down, and he literally was tweeting like the game's score, Metacritic scores, and all the awards they had won, and he was like, "Is this not enough? Like, really?" And what was it that they did? Evil Within. That
Yeah,
means
Evil Within. Well, it, yeah, Evil
we may
Within.
not get another Evil Within, which sucks because those games are fucking great. I hope we get a three, but the fact that they were excited to go in a different direction to try something new, and it resonated, and people really, I enjoyed it. I didn't finish it, but I love the art style. I dug the gameplay. Lots of people loved the game, and then Microsoft is like, "Yeah, no, we're good." Like, what the fuck? Like.
Exactly. I don't understand it. I mean, I do. If you look at it just from the standpoint of just pure numbers, right? Just pure year-over-year growth, or what, for whatever reason, like we just didn't feel this was the way. It's like, but also like you went on a buying spree of studios because you wanted to make sure that your service had games.
Exclusives. Yep.
Exclusives. You come out with the exclusives, people play them, and then you shut them down anyway. You should have
Right.
just fucking left them alone.
Leave them alone. Yeah, exactly. Because there's no way. I don't know. I didn't look at like sales or anything, but there's no way that Hi-Fi Rush being as big of a hit as it was, there's no way that the Evil Within 2 sold more units, or I wouldn't think, right? Because survival horror is already a niche thing, right? So I know that outside of your Resident Evils and your Silent Hills and this and that, like survival horror, I don't think those games typically do like gangbuster numbers anyway, right? And so for them to go away from what they've been doing and make this game that's more widely accessible to people. And yeah, I guess. See, this is the thing with Game Pass. It's hard to be like, well, the game didn't sell well, but like, how many motherfuckers played it? You know what I mean? So this is where another thing where I'm just like, man, fuck Game Pass. I keep going back to that. It's just not a thing that I'm super into. And I feel like, shit like this is just another example of like why it's not a great idea. But what the fuck do I know? You know what I mean? Like, I still buy physical games, so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, like, when, I honestly don't know anything about, when a game, if they're paid for the game to be on Game Pass, and then they're paid for a certain amount of, what do you call it? Like, it's just like streaming where,
Right. Clicks or
yeah,
whatever.
you get a certain amount of revenue if somebody pays it, or if it's just a straight off the top, like, you get X amount of money for it to be there, and then, and that
Right.
maybe if people really like it, then they'll buy it or whatever. Like, I don't know how any of that shit works, but
Right.
anyway, all right. So we have two really good movies to talk about today. Which one do you want to do first?
Yeah, let's do Humane first.
Okay, so Humaine is Caitlin Cronenberg's kind of debut feature. And it let me bring up the page here. So it's got a lot of really good people in it. Jay Baruchel, Emily Hampshire. So if you ever watched Schitt's Creek, obviously Stevie, Peter Gallagher, a fucking standout performance by Enrico
Yes, sir.
Colantuoni, who, I mean, obviously he's been in tons of things, but he was Keith Mars, Veronica Mars's father. So it's basically set in this future, I think, based on the way they talked about things. I think it's in Canada,
Yeah, it's very Canadian. Yeah.
Where climate change has gotten to the point where things are just very, very bad. And every there was a kind of a set of agreements from countries called the Athens Accords that basically all the countries that agreed to the Athens Accord agreed to reduce their populations by 20%. And the way that Canada decides to do it is by doing what they're calling enlisting. And so the idea being that you can essentially enlist for euthanasia. And so if a parent or parents enlist in euthanasia, the government will send kind of these private contractors to their home where they administer the drugs to kill you, and then your family gets a check, basically. And then the media is like, oh, these are the brave heroes that enlisted this week. So Peter Gallagher plays basically a retired news anchor who invites all of his kids. Jay Baruchel is like a member of the administration. Emily Hampshire, she plays like the CEO of a drug company who had some medications not go very well. Sebastian Chacon plays their adopted son who had a drug problem and then had gotten in an accident that actually killed someone. And then Alana Bale plays the youngest daughter, Ashley, who was basically like a failed actress. So he invites all his kids, him and his wife, played by Uni Park, who's like a she had she's an Asian woman had a restaurant that had to shut down. She had been like a celebrity chef. So they call their kids over for dinner because to tell them that they were enlisting, and not just tell them they were enlisting, but have the company come to the house that night in order to do it. So obviously the kids are upset, but then a wrinkle appears where Dawn, Peter Gallagher's wife, is nopes the fuck out and leaves. And then basically Enrico Colatani, who plays Bob, who's the head of the cleanup crew, is like, yeah, we need two bodies.
Yeah, doesn't yeah, one way or the other, right? We need
Right.
I have to bring two bodies back to the to corporate today. So
And then
you
it kind of
can't exactly nope out of this thing, right?
right.
Once you enlist, you kind of and you can, right?
Right.
But then there's like you sign this paperwork and basically you end up on like a sex offender list and they leak all this stuff about you and shit like that. So it basically destroys your life if you
Right.
wimp out on it after you enlist.
Yeah. So it kind of starts off as this like kind of dystopian view into kind of a potential. What surprised me about the setup for it was how realistic it seemed from a standpoint of governmental policies. Like you almost could see like, yeah, that this seems like something that would happen. Like countries would. I mean, the setup for it seemed just so sadly realistic. You could see people who were kind of reaching their end of life. Because like Peter Gallagher, his point was like, for decades I talked about seeing, that I saw this coming, like would kind of press people. Like I feel like as a public figure, I almost have a responsibility to say, like, hey, my generation, even though I was kind of pointing out this shit was happening, but my generation, this happened on our watch, and I should do my part to help out. And his kids obviously have very different views on, especially Jay Baruchel. He's kind of he's in the administration and he's kind of like, denying about climate change, and it's kind of it's implied that they are heavily targeting undocumented families because they're fast tracking, undocumented immigrants, their kids fast tracking them towards citizenship. So like almost as a way to like gerrymander districts through death. And it all felt entirely real. Like you were like, yeah, I could absolutely see countries coming together and be, and then they're like, Russia said they've met their 20%, and it's like it's done in such a way that you're like, no, they have not. And so the setup of this seemed entirely realistic. I think that once it got into almost like a Ready or Not type of thing where the siblings kind of turned on each other, it lost some of it for me. The one thing I will say is that Kaylin Cronenberg is not, she's not her dad and she's not her brother. So if you're going into this, whereas they lean very heavily into the body horror aspect, and obviously there's societal takes there. Actually, David Cronenberg, he had a lot of kind of societal hot takes in his movies, and Infinity Pool was very much anti-rich people.
Well, right. But
There's
even but in that, the fact that it was a Cronenberg, even though it was, his kid, that really bizarre sequence of that body horror thing felt really forced.
Yes.
And I at no point in watching this did I expect that to happen, but at the same time, like, I also probably wouldn't have been surprised if there was just something thrown in. Just because her last name is Cronenberg, unless that's what people expect. But it was nice that, this movie got to be its own thing, and it didn't
Exactly. Yes.
rely on that, because that would have been completely out of place.
Right. I mean, she definitely, by with this film, is kind of showing that, even though she comes from a storied filmmaking background, she's her, she has her own eye, she has her own way of doing things. And I mean, in this movie had some very funny, but funny because of how uncomfortable it was. Like the whole scene when Bob explains that he needs another body was fucking hilarious, but also so uncomfortable. And it's like her idea of using humor, I mean, because Possessor is a very serious film. There's really not a
Oh,
lot
for
to
sure.
laugh about in that film.
Jesus
And
Christ,
then
no.
Infinity Pool, same thing. There's some kind of like, ha, like tension, almost like tension breaking type of stuff. This movie is definitely more of a, I don't know if I call it a horror comedy, but it's got more.
I think it's a black comedy for
Yeah,
sure.
I
I
think so.
just,
Yeah, that's, yeah.
I think that despite the fact that it's dealing with some pretty heavy, heavy material at the same
Yeah.
time, like even then Bob, what's the guy's name? Enrico.
Colantani.
His performance is so fucking good.
Yes.
Like he's saying, he's like so matter-of-factly stating
Yep.
some pretty horrific shit, but just the way that he is, like, he's just so charming and so fucking funny. And even like, like when the siblings kind of start to turn each other or whatever, which, would happen, for this
Oh,
particular group of people,
yes.
you know what I mean? That's absolutely how that would go down. But even it, like, even the violence almost had like a, again, it was, it's not necessarily like brutal, but at the same time, there's some pretty gnarly stuff. And but it's done in a way that it almost makes you laugh because of their
Right.
reactions to it and stuff. Because they obviously come from money and they're not used to what they're having to deal with and stuff. And
Right.
so it's like one of those things where somebody gets stabbed through the hand, and everybody, even the person who did it, is like, "Oh God!"
Right,
Like,
exactly. Yeah.
like
Yeah.
so it's just, it's. I certainly think it's a black comedy.
Yeah.
It's up there with stuff like what's the fuck's that movie with Ethan Embry and Todd Packer? Cheap Thrills.
Oh.
I think this would pair really well with Cheap Thrills,
Yes.
you know?
Yes.
Like it's kind of that kind of tone.
I mean, the only thing I think that at the ending was just a bit too, like, I don't, I'm not gonna say pat, but I guess that would be the way that I would call it, because it just kind of like it was funny from the standpoint of the way that the government would absolutely lie about, because what happens over the course of the film is that you find that Bob Enrico Colantani, he kind of has his own agenda, and is using his position to enforce a vendetta that he has against his family, right? And so the ending in some ways was very like tied up a bit too cleanly, but
I agree,
also
yeah.
was absolutely, again, you could see a government like covering up a huge fuck up from somebody that they've contracted to do what is, a very sensitive a very sensitive thing, just so that they don't have to be held accountable. So I was kind of willing, like when you had the ending, I was like, and then there was that little mid-credit thing, and I was like, okay,
Yeah.
like okay, all right, I'm willing to kind of let that go. And I think that, yeah, I mean, it definitely was a pretty novel take on, the potential for, governmental policy changes due to climate change. But even like little touches, like everybody when they're outside, they have like a have an umbrella because the sun is so, intense. I mean, like there's these little touches, kind of here and there. And I've seen some stuff where it's just kind of like, oh, this is like a fuck the rich movie, and that's not really what it is at all. It just happens to be that the focus is on a family who has money, but never once did I consider this to be like a class type of warfare type of movie. It was more like kind of showing like what would happen in a situation like this when, you now have a bunch of siblings and it's like they all figure fine. Like, I don't what do you mean one of us has to die? Like, and nobody's willing to do it, even though all of their lives were shitty. And they all had a reason to where they could have just been like, yeah, it'll be me, it's fine. But because they were not great people, they all were pointing fingers at how shitty everybody else was without kind of reflecting on their own failings. But I think it was a pretty confident first feature. Be interesting to see what she does. I'm glad that she's staked out a difference. I mean, I like Brandon Cronenberg's films, but when he starts off so wedded to some of the concepts and ideas in his dad's films, on the one hand it's understandable, but on the other hand you're like, well, you also need to kind of show that you kind of have your own voice. And I think she really out of the gate, even if the film wasn't like gangbusters start to finish, the fact that she's out of the gate saying, yeah, no, this is I have a very different view of things and a very different way of making films, I think that's fantastic.
I agree, and I think he did, right? Like, obviously, Possessor was pretty clearly like a Cronenberg joint, but Viral was very much kind of it's you could see like a David Cronenberg doing a movie like Viral, but at the same time, Viral felt like his own thing, and I think that's where that scene in Infinity Pool is even more disappointing because of how because I it's a really cool concept and it's a good movie, but just the fact that for whatever reason, in my opinion, that sequence felt really forced I to be honest, kind of wish it wasn't in it. I think I might have enjoyed the movie a little better, a little more, without it. But I mean. For Possessor, like I don't feel like anything in Possessor was unnecessarily done. I feel like
No.
everything in that movie kind of,
That's a great movie.
But and in Infinity Pool, could have been great, and to me, it just missed the mark, slightly. But Viral was fucking great, so.
All right. So our next movie is one I had been looking forward to quite a bit. The kind of screen to VOD time on this one was like basically
Jesus.
you blink and there it was.
Couple weeks, yeah.
and that is Abigail. So directed by Matt Bettinelli Open and Tyler Gillett, who of course did Ready or Not. And I will
Radio
say,
Silence.
Yeah, Radio Silence, sorry. Like, if you did not like Ready or Not, this is not going to be the movie for you.
No.
if you loved Ready or Not, this is entirely your thing.
Yep.
So, basically, we have a kind of a ragtag crew of idiots. Melissa Barrera from the last two Scream movies plays Joey, the always amazing Dan Stevens, who I did not recognize at the beginning. That's how.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I just was just like, holy shit. Plays Frank, and these are just like code names. William Catlett, who, if you watched Black Lightning, William Catlett played Lala in Black Lightning. So he's in it as Rickles. Catherine Newton, whom I absolutely love, is Sammy. Kevin Durand. Is Peter Kevin Durand. He's been in a bunch of things, but trying to think, he's in Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, although I haven't seen that. But he was in Lock and Key. I'm trying to think the most.
He was in that Wolverine movie.
He was. Yeah, he was in.
He was Dukes. Origins. Yeah.
Yep. But he was. If you watch The Strain, he was Vasily. That's kind of
that's right.
Silly fat, yeah. And then Angus Cloud. This is actually one of the last things that Angus Cloud worked on, unfortunately, before his untimely death, where he plays Dean. So these are
Katie pointed out. Not to interrupt, but I didn't know who that was.
Yeah, he was in Euphoria. Yeah.
And Katie was like, he was in that Euphoria, and I was like, I didn't watch that shit. And she's like, she knew it wasn't. Which never happens. She doesn't even know who Nicolas Cage is.
Yeah.
I'm a failure as a father for so many reasons, but that might be the most glaring.
and then a very brief Giancarlo Esposito. Basically, so these five idiots play some folks that are they're tasked with kidnapping a young girl played by Alicia Weir, the titular Abigail, kidnapping her, bringing her to a house, and just staying with her for 24 hours. That's all they had to do. And of course, things go sideways, and this is not giving anything away because it, unfortunately, in true, marketing,
that's actually something I want to talk about when
nonsense,
we get into it.
They give away the twist in the trailer that Abigail is actually a vampire. And so these five morons, because they're all dipshits, like, make no...
Yeah, big time,
like, like, no, there's no bones about it. This is the, when you would read Mad Magazine and it was made by the usual gang of idiots, that's these people. They basically have to survive the night knowing now that this girl that they had kidnapped and thought was drugged up is actually loose in the house and a vampire. In typical Radio Silence fashion, it's very funny. There is a ton of blood, like a ridiculous amount of blood. And, the focus in terms of, like, the character we're all supposed to be rooting for, just like in how in Ready or Not it was Samara Weaving's character, it's Melissa Barrera's character of Joey. Fuck it. I don't want to spoil things, and then I'll let you kind of talk about it. But this movie has a turn by Dan Stevens that just was like, the entire time I'm watching him, I'm just like, he deserves to be so much bigger of a movie star than he is.
Yep.
Because 100%. It's effortless.
Yep.
How good he is from the character he was at the beginning and then how it turns. And it's so good, and it's just like there's certain actors that you just go, I don't know if it's just like the projects they choose, and I'm not saying he's not happy with the projects he's chosen, I'm not saying he shouldn't take them, because I love his movies,
Well, shit, man. He was in Godzilla Kong. Like, he's in big stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, he's in Kong because Adam Wingard made that, and
right.
he was in the
he's
guest.
He never seems to be the focal point, and he should be.
Right, exactly. And that's what it is. Like he is so fucking good
mm-hmm.
that you want him to have, like, we went and saw The Fall Guy this weekend, and I fucking loved that movie. And I'd be 100% honest, if I was John Krasinski and I watched that film, I would be like, I would be asking Emily Blunt straight up whether she fucked Ryan Gosling, because their chemistry on set was so good. They were both so good. That movie is absolutely fantastic, and I want a movie like that for Dan Stevens. I want a movie like
yeah.
that, a huge studio joint where he's front and center and he's allowed to be as good as he is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, yes, but at the same time, I kind of like that
yeah.
he chooses to be in the things that he's in. I don't necessarily think he's... It's hard to say, right? Because, like, it's like Pat Healy and what's the guy's name in like Blue Ruin? Fuck. It's not Pat Healy. It's I can't think of his name. And fuck, he's amazing. He's so great in everything that he does.
Oh,
and Macon Blair.
Yeah.
He's so good. And you know, it almost kind of feels like I don't know, this is weird. But it feels more personal.
Yeah.
So like, I almost don't want him to be in something bigger because I feel like I get to enjoy his work.
Yes.
And I will shout from the rooftops, but I don't want Dan Stevens to be in a Mission Impossible. You know what I'm saying? Like, I
would love Dan Stevens to be in
I know. I said it. As soon as I said it, I was like, well, that's not right.
Yeah, like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, Dan Stevens as the villain in Mission Impossible 9? Like, yes,
know.
Please.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know.
I know what you mean. It's like he's ours, right? Because of the type of stuff he does, he's ours.
Because,
and it's like, when, once he kind of goes into these bigger things, then the demands
people aren't going to appreciate how amazing he is.
Exactly, yes.
And that's going to piss me off.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
So
when he's in Fast and Furious 12 and they're like, I did not like him as Dom Toretto's cousin. And you're like, fuck you. You haven't
yeah,
seen the guest.
Exactly.
Stop talking. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. You don't know what we've been through.
Exactly.
You don't know our life.
Yeah. You don't know what we had to watch in order for this to get through.
Yeah. You're right.
So anyway, you had something to say though about the.
Well, I was going to talk about the marketing.
About the marketing, yeah.
Because you would think, you would hope, I guess, and we are huge genre nerds, obviously, right? And so maybe you know our point of view on these things is slightly skewed, to say the least. But you would hope at this point, just saying, you know, new Radio Silence movie would be enough, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, it got made. I don't know, you know, how difficult it was, but I would feel like at this point, I mean, the last two Scream movies made a lot of money.
Yes, they did.
So you would think, right? But it's the same thing like with James Wan or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has to do 7 Insidious movies to make one fucking whatever that, what was that movie?
Oh,
why can I never remember the name of that movie?
Fuck. I know what you're talking about. I want to say Terrifier, but I know that's not it.
No, the one with the... Fuck. Hold
yeah,
on. You know what I'm talking about.
Malignant.
Malignant, thank you. Yeah. So, in order to get Malignant made, he has to show fucking dumbass Jason Blum, you know... That hey, I've made you a gazillion dollars. Can I just make this weird fucking thing I want to make? Like, you know. And so Radio Silence, like, imagine this is the way that I knew what this movie was. Katie had no idea, and she was here, and I turned it on, and she was like, "You watching the movie?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she's like, "Can I watch it?" And I'm like, "Of course." Mm-hmm. So I didn't tell her anything. She knew nothing about it. Mm-hmm. She had no idea. And her reaction to everything in this movie was exactly how everyone should react to a movie.
Yeah.
Like, she was so concerned for Abigail. When Dan Stevens put the gun to her head,
yeah.
Katie's mouth was wide open.
Yeah.
She was like, she was so, she had no idea that there was a vampire involved in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And also, my daughter's not dumb, right?
Right.
So when they're all in the house and Giancarlo Esposito leaves and they start interacting with each other, right? And mm-hmm. nobody trusts anybody and this and that. And she's like, "So is this just a big setup?" And I was like, "I don't know if they're being set up." Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, "We probably should just watch the movie," right? I didn't want to be like, "Ah, she's a vampire. She can fuck them all up."
Right.
Like, because I wanted to see that reaction. And that is exactly how I feel like this should have been marketed.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, it sucks that they felt like they had to lead with, "Yo, no, she's a vampire the whole time, guys." It has to be, because this movie probably cost a lot of money and the studio obviously needed to recoup, that money. And even though they didn't, it performed like shit and it's going to be seen as a failure. Imagine like you, it's same thing with
million,
the,
which is like a rounding error.
Right.
I mean, right. Gross worldwide is 37. So, I mean,
yeah, it's, I still think at the end of the day, the fact that it hit VOD so fast,
yes,
it's going to be seen as maybe not a flop, but it probably didn't perform as was hoped. Right. And the same thing with, oh shit, I had it and I lost the thought. But anyway, my point is, like, imagine audience reaction if you did not know that Abigail was the vampire.
Right, because they set things up where, what the folks in the house learn, they don't know who she is. They just know, they find out that, like, she's then the daughter of this, like a Kaiser Soze level of crime boss, where people who want to go against this person get murdered horribly.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so they could have set it up like, okay, they kidnapped her, they have to survive, and this crime family has a history of erasing people who go against them.
Right.
So they just now have to survive somebody coming to rescue her. They don't, I mean, it reminded me of, and we talked about this in fucking Ragnarok, where like in the trailer, like
that,
fucking Hulk shows up and you're like, why wouldn't you not want that to be the oh shit moment of the film?
The pop. If that had happened, if these MCU nerds were sitting in the theater without knowing who the gladiator or whatever the champion was, right?
Right.
And fucking Hulk kicked that wall down. Good Lord.
Right, but they wanted to show the joke. Oh, I know him from work.
Right.
Which was funny, but also you're just like, and it's the same thing here. Like, but I guess the only reason I can think that they wanted to show the vampire is they wanted to bring in a horror movie audience.
Exactly that. And that's disappointing to me because... Yes. Because I know, you know, it was difficult for me to trust in anyone's intelligence these days, and it's even harder for a studio who has invested millions of dollars and needs a return on that investment to trust that an audience, you know, would be excited by that, and then word of mouth should have made this movie go way bigger than it ended up doing. So they were like, Pet Cemetery was the example I was going to give.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because they changed it from Gage to Ellie, and they showed that in every trailer. And even the directors were like, we kind of didn't want them to do that, but, you know, they did it. So it's like, well, so like that, to me, if you're... And I love this movie, but don't get me wrong. I thought it was fantastic. I you know, the movie's great, but I also enjoyed my experience watching it because I watched it with Katie and I didn't tell her it was a vampire, and like watching
that
her
would,
reaction
that would be very fun.
Was so fucking fun. And it obviously kind of hit for her because she's been talking about it I think we watched it Wednesday. She's still talking about it. And then she like was on the phone with her, one of her little friends or whatever, and she came in the room and was like, where was that movie at? Because like Lexi wants to watch it. And I'm like, see, this is how it should work.
Right.
Like, don't tell her what it was. Be like, yo, this movie was great. You know, it just sucks that for whatever reason, trailers these days and marketing these days, it gives you the entire fucking thing. Like, there's no surprise anymore. There's right. no, like, there's no twist. I mean, there's a twist, but I'm saying, like, you already know so much about shit by the time you get to watch it. The movie, honestly, it has to go, like, so far above and beyond. To surprise anybody anymore. And that, I think that sucks.
I agree. I am glad and actually surprised at that they actually cast a kid. Mm-hmm. Alicia Weir is like 15 years old and Abigail's supposed to be like 12.
Right.
Like, and I understand like with the rules around minors and when they can shoot and all that stuff and the limits, like it would have been such an easy cop out for them to cast a 22-year-old mm-hmm. and say, no. She's whatever, but no, they it had to be that way because you have to think this little slip of a girl is just this terrified child. It doesn't work,
and she's so good,
but it doesn't work any other way.
Right.
You have to cast a kid.
Yep.
And I'm so glad that they were able to do that because it makes such a huge – in the same way that like Salem's Lot, as cheesy as it is, when you see that kid floating outside the window scratching, if that had been like a fucking 25-year-old
trying to be,
you'd be like, whatever. But like there's something about a child vampire that is just unsettling as hell. Like
good
Salem's
Lord,
Lot,
yes.
Interview with a Vampire. Like there's something about that mixture of innocence and just flat out – ferocity at this movie.
What
I love about this movie, this is 30 Days of Night vampires, right? Like it's teeth for days. It's just blood. It's savagery. And it was just such a fun movie. I am a little like I'm like, don't get me wrong, like I know that, like, you know, Scream. So, like, there was Ready or Not, which is very similar. Abigail and Ready or Not are very similar. And then, of course, Scream and Scream 6 are very similar. It's like, you don't want these folks to be... I loved it. I want the next thing, though, to be horror comedy, but, like, different. Like, because there are so many beats in this film and ways in which Joey's... you know, character kind of, you know, it's like, it's very similar to Ready or Not.
Yes.
It doesn't have that iconic, like Samara Weaving in her chucks out on the table, out on the stairs, enjoying a smoke. And I feel like the supporting cast in Ready or Not, they were like, like there was such a fun mess of complete dipshits. Mm-hmm. The supporting cast in this movie definitely get more of a chance to be more than just fodder and idiots. It's like we've seen four movies from these folks. Two of them are closed house, blood soaked you know, black comedy romps, and two are, you know, ghost face movies.
Yeah.
So it's like, where did they go? If I were them, I wouldn't touch the Scream franchise with a fucking 10-foot pole at this point. Like that franchise having issues, and let somebody else wade into that mess. So it'll be interesting to kind of see where they go next, you know, and what they can do. Like, I would love to see, you know, kind of in this, you know, I mean, there's so many horror directors that are, you know, bounce, you know, they pivot kind of from idea to idea. Like if you look at, I mean, like Jordan Peele, like his, you know, there's some, you know, Us was very different from, you know, his previous movie, and then Nope was very different, but there were still some common themes. It's like, and then some of the other kind of folks that we've seen. I mean, even like Adam Wingard, right? Like, I mean, God, before he got into the Godzilla movies, the type of things he wanted to do, the kind of the horror tropes he was taking and then putting a new spin on stuff was very, like, I want to see, I'm really excited to see kind of what they do next, because I mean, they're very, very talented and they make really entertaining films. And they get such good performances out of their actors. But yeah, I mean, I had such, I knew I would like this movie. Like
I did too, yeah.
that's part of it. Like, I'm glad I didn't have to, be paid to be critical in any sort of capacity for this movie, because I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like a child vampire? Like, yes, please. Like
Yeah.
I knew I was gonna love this film. I would have been so crushed if I did not love this film. Does it make
Same.
me blind to its faults? Yeah, maybe. Do I give a shit? Not
Nope.
one fucking bit.
Yeah,
Like,
exactly.
not even a little. And I think it's a solid movie. I think it's, I mean, I was looking forward to it. Glad I saw it. I can't wait to watch it again.
Same.
You
I
know,
want the
and
4K like right now.
yeah.
I want to double feature it with Renfield. I just think that would be an
Oh my God,
incredible,
yes.
like double, like a movie night.
That would be amazing. Yeah, 100%. I'm just laughing now, just thinking about how good that would be. So definitely check it out. It's well worth your time. Yeah, so real quick on games, because I know we've already been talking a while. So I got an email from Larian Studios, whom I've been waiting for my physical of Baldur's Gate 3, and they're like, oh yeah, we know some people in Europe and Oceania, which wherever that is, I'm an ignorant American. They're already enjoying their copy, but you need to wait longer. And they're like, you're gonna get yours later this month. Xbox people will get theirs in the next 2 weeks. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. If they're getting theirs in the next 2 weeks, and I'm later this month, that's the end of the month. That's like a week from when Final Shape drops. And the whole reason when I bought this, I bought it at the end of November. I said it'd be shipping Q1, which ended in the end of March. And my everlasting hope, and I my boss, whom I love to death, he has a phrase, and it is this: when anytime anybody says I hope this happens, his phrase is hope in one hand and shit in the other and see which fills
See
up
which one
first.
fills up first. Yep. That's right.
And so he'll just type hope in one hand, dot dot dot. So my hope was that I had gotten my physical copy of Baldur's Gate 3 during the 6 month wait between the beginning of the year and when Final Shape dropped, and that I would spend my time playing Baldur's Gate 3. And that's not gonna happen. And as much as I'm excited to play Baldur's Gate 3, and I can't wait to play Baldur's Gate 3, if you think for one fucking second, once Final Shape drops, I'm not going to be doing anything but be 1,000% invested in the end of a story that has been 10 years in the making, you are out of your goddamn mind. Like, 100%. It's going to be all Destiny all the time. Because it's not just I have to, there's the power level to go up, there's the story, there's it's gonna that and it's that's where I want my focus to be. It's not gonna be that's where I feel like it has to be because of this seasonal thing or that seasonal thing. That's where I want it to be because that's what I want to give the ending of this game what it deserves, which is my complete and total attention. So I look forward to playing Baldur's Gate 3. I don't know, September.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's so unfair to so many other games. when Destiny drops an expansion or a new season or something, because I'd stop doing everything else. Like, it's all I do.
Yeah. And, you know, what's funny is between, you know, games on the Steam Deck, which I paid, you know, like, oh, I mean, I'm playing Fallout New Vegas on the Steam Deck with for everything, all of the DLC in the base game, I paid $5. So it's like I'm filling up my gaming time with either very inexpensive things on the Steam Deck or free with my paid subscription on Game Pass. Because I started the Yakuza Kiwami, the very first one. And, you know, I'm just kind of plugging along with that and having a good time with it. And it's like, you know, I kind of, and when you consider all of the games that have come out since the beginning of the year, you know, the two big ones being like Stellar Blade and Rise of the Ronin, and I didn't buy them, and I didn't rent them, and I haven't played them, and yet somehow I'm still having a good time playing things. You know, I'm glad for that, because it's kind of taught me, like, yeah, you can wait a minute, and at some point maybe I'll fire up Gamefly again, or maybe I won't, and I'll pick up Rise of the Ronin at Black Friday on a 2-for-3, you know what I mean? Get all three of them for buy two, get one free, and pay less than I would have paid for 2 months of Gamefly. Whatever, it doesn't matter. But the point is, you know, I'm having such a good time, and then with Into the Light, you know, kind of getting back into the weekly, okay, let's jump in on Tuesday, let's get some bounties, let's play some shit, have some fun. You know, it's been nice to kind of get back into that rhythm, and I'm so excited. I am so excited for the sandbox of powers we're going to have when Final Shape drops, and I'm so excited to see, you know, what they do with episodes rather than seasons. And, and the reality is that I really, on a personal level, I really want this to be a success for the people at Bungie, because I feel like their road of late has been a rough one.
Yes.
They, in terms of what they've had to put up with from their senior management and what they've had to put up with from fans. I really want a win for them, because they've given me so much over the past 10 years.
Yep.
I can't help but want them to have a success, a win here.
If 1,000,000%.
Just to tell the folks that have lost faith, like, we still have it. Like, we also we care about this. We want to go out on a high note, just like you want.
Even just Into the Light being as well received as it has been, right? And how fucking excited people, because it's, you know, it's Bungie, right? If they do nothing else that you can appreciate, you know they fucking know how to drop a trailer,
right? Yeah,
and people get so fucking hype, right? Yeah. So just seeing how the discourse on the internet has completely turned for Destiny, because of Into the Light and a couple of trailers. It is fantastic. And I can't fucking wait for the mic drop that I feel like Final Shape is going to be.
I mean, just watching some of the Prismatic stuff, like, my jaw has literally been open.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm watching, and I am thinking, like, it's got me going, what if you could combine this and this? Like, what if you...
Yep.
Like, you know, what if... Can I have a cold snap grenade and consume it for a Bleak Watcher turret, but that also procs Heat Rising?
Yep.
Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like,
I know.
I'm fucking floating above while my turret is doing its thing, and I'm is that a thing? Yep. Like, when I saw Phoenix dive into Threadlings, I was like,
oh, I know.
No. No, you didn't. Like, that.
In the list of, like, exotic perks that the exotic class items are going to give us. Are you shitting me?
Right.
Fucking Shards of Galanor mixed with, what's the Star Eater scales?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're telling me, as long as I use the throwing knives super, right? Okay, so I'm going to get up to 50% of my super back immediately.
Yeah.
because of shards, and at the same time, Star Eater scales, if I pick up an orb, it's going to overcharge my super, so my super is going to be overcharged, and I'm going to get another one right away. Get the fuck out of here.
Right.
Like, please, come at me, raid bosses. Like, you're done.
Yeah.
Fuck out of here. Right. I will solo raids, bitch. Don't fuck with me.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Like, I cannot wait.
Right.
We talked about this. We've talked about it before, but I love that however many years we are into this thing, they're just like, we're just going to break the game and let people have fun. Fuck it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I've wanted for so long. Mm-hmm. And that very much feels like what they're doing for the end of this near 10-year saga we've been going through, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait. Fuck.
Right.
I might take the week off, to be honest. I might go into work tomorrow. Like, I need some days, fellas. Sorry about it.
Because I was looking at the stacking the exotics for Warlocks too, and I'm just like, I mean, Osmiomancy, which is like grenades recharge quicker on hits, Seeker mm-hmm. spawn grenade travels further, but then also like, you know, final blows with weapons to damage type matching your super grants you super energy, but mm-hmm. also like weapon final blows the damage type matching your grenade. Grant a stacking grenade, so I can do extra mm-hmm. grenade damage. Like if I'm running, you know, like a stasis with Verglas, and my grenades recharge quicker, and then the seeker travels further. But then I also get a stacking grenade damage, or I get right. stacking grenade damage, and then, I mean, like it just blows my like I cannot like it's gonna be.
Dude, it's so fucking exciting, man. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, for the amount of hours that we put into this thing, because at this point, you know, it's in the thousands, right?
Right.
You know, and to its credit, as it exists, it's still a thing that I look so fucking forward to playing with you every week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if we're doing shit that we've done a billion fucking times.
Right.
Just to get a new set of pants. Right. Right? Or whatever. Right? Just, it just goes so far beyond just a game for right. me. And for the future of it to look so bright, and it's also kind of scary because I think that they're going to break our hearts. Story-wise.
It is going to be rough.
Yeah.
It's going to be needle drop, bones and all.
Yeah, like exactly.
Sitting there, staring at the screen, like one lone tear.
Mm-hmm.
Just, and I'm like, I am alone in this world.
Yeah.
I've seen the end. I've seen through the veil.
Right.
And it's cold
right.
and empty. Like,
yeah.
How do I move on? How right. do I go forward?
Yeah, exactly.
What is there for me?
Like, anyway, this new auto rifle, let's shoot the shit in the face.
Yeah, it's like, all right, it's like just like curled up on my side on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But
like the
you got
first
a
time,
on.
like the first time as a child, you ever heard your parent cry, and you're like, wait, yeah. what do you mean it's not all great?
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. I see, and this is the thing, right? This game, again, game, and I use that word very loosely because it's so much more than that.
Yeah.
Like Goose is excited for the final shape. She's played approximately 15 minutes of Destiny. She created a hunter. She ran screaming from the thrall,
yeah.
And that's about as far as she got, right?
Yeah.
Even she can't wait.
Yeah.
Because I won't shut the fuck up about this game. And she's invested in the story at this point, you know? It's yeah. just, for all the shit we give Bungie for their storytelling, if you're a Destiny, and Destiny's a full-time job, don't get me wrong. Like,
yeah.
you have to watch YouTube videos, you have to read fucking lore books, yep. all this shit. But if you're into the story at this point, I can't imagine not being excited for
yeah.
for what the final shape is supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, my only hope is, and this kind of goes, you know, this goes back to kind of the Lost thing, right? There were people who were very disappointed with the ending of Lost because it wasn't what they wanted it to be, and they didn't have all their questions answered.
Right.
And then there was somebody like me, and I came to watching all of Lost later, So when it came to the ending of Lost, I just was like, well, I wanted to just see how it ended. I didn't have any preconceived notions. I didn't
Yeah.
care about, I didn't have a list of questions I wanted answered. That's how
Right.
I'm going into this. I don't have a list of things I want to see. I'm just excited to see what it ends up being, and then I
Yeah.
can evaluate it on what it is, rather
Right.
than kind of bringing my own stuff into it. And like I said, I'm also excited to see, well, what does Destiny look like after this? So yeah, and I mean, honestly, it's like I want to take the tail, but I also like I don't want to just burn through. Like I want to savor it. I want to be able
Oh yeah,
to,
for sure. Yeah.
you know, to take it. Yeah, it's just that balance, right? Like I want to be excited. I want to be able to say I can't wait for tomorrow night when Mitch and I get together and we do this thing, right? I don't want it to just be like I sit down and then at 1 o'clock I'm pissed off because the servers are on fire and nobody can get in,
Yes.
and then
Yes.
I took the day off but I can't actually play until 4 o'clock and what the fuck?
Well,
And
that's what I
then
was
it's
gonna
like,
say.
you know what I
If I
mean? It's
did
like,
take day off, it
yeah,
wouldn't be
it'd be
Tuesday, it'd be
Wednesday,
Wednesday.
yeah, right. And I also I wanna, like I said, I don't want to be like, I don't know. I kind of go back and forth, so I don't. It's who knows, but I'm really excited to, you know. I mean, you know, you're one of my closest friends in the universe, and we've been playing this game together for so long. And as we've talked about so many times on this show, what makes this game so special is it really is the friends we made along the way, as cliche as that
Yes.
is. It's all of the moments. It's the team Yahoos. It's I will I laugh to this day. I remember when I died, and because I had done the marshmallow emote over, you did the text, hold on, texting, and I laughed so hard because of the like little shit like that. And I mean, if you're a Destiny fan, you know. If you're not, to explain that, it's not the same. It's being able to say, I don't want what's in that fucking chest because there's a jumping puzzle to get to it. It's
Yeah,
the let's fucking go that you scream out when you finally kill a boss, you know. It's the
Oh my
last
God, I talked
second.
about it today. It's
It's
fucking
it, it it's the
day
year.
one finishing Grasp of Avarice, even though
Right.
it took us 4 hours.
Right. It's the year. It's the last guardian standing, running for your life. It's the your
Yes.
light fades away, wipe screen that then gets removed because somebody was able to respawn at the last second, right? It's
Yeah, hey
it.
Sean, don't jump through the electricity. What does Sean do? Jump through the goddamn electricity.
Right, exactly. It's like all of those things together, and it's 10 years of them, right? And I thought about it today, though, and this is not how I want to end this conversation, but it's whatever. I was feeling, and I one of the things that made me sad about the idea of the final shape dropping is that we won't hear Lance Reddick anymore.
Yeah.
Like I thought
No, n
about,
no disrespect to Keith David.
no
Keith David's
disrespect to Keith
amazing.
David, but
But yeah.
presumably he's going to re-record all of it, like
Right.
all the little barks, all the, you know, it's like on the one hand you want him to, on the other hand you don't. Like
Yeah.
I want to hear. Like before Final Shape, I'll have to do Sepix Prime just to hear, you know,
Yes.
they always do.
They
Like one more
always do.
time, right? Like,
Yeah.
you know, or the Red Legion, you know, pulled us into a war that, you know,
Whether
whatever. And it's like you kind
we
of, whether we wanted it or not, right?
wanted
It's just like, you know, you think about things like that, and that to me is just such a testament to this game that like you have such a connection to it that is something you think about. You think about this character, this person who also loved the game
Yes.
and we no longer have with us, that a part of them is not gonna be there. And will it, like, will we still have that opportunity to hear, you know, the work that he did? So you know, but I can't wait. And at this point, like I said, I'd hoped I would get Baldur's Gate in time. I don't really care anymore. It'll come when it comes. But what I really want is just to play it with you, see how it ends. You know, get prismatic. You know, just start fucking min-maxing with builds and just having a good old time with it and seeing what works, what doesn't, and all that shit. So.
Yep.
Yeah, so it'll be a good old time. Yeah. All right, so I think that's it for episode 198. Like we have a bunch of movies that we have not talked about. Like we kind of got hit with like a fucking cavalcade of films, and then the new Strangers drops next week,
Yep.
which I'm hoping to go see. So we definitely have our plates full for the next episode. But whatever we decide to talk about, hopefully you'll be here with us. So thank you so much. This has been episode 198 of Vowed by Werewolves. We thank you for hanging out with us, and we look forward to spending some more time with you in the next 2 weeks. So for myself and Mitch, thank you again. Good night, and have a good evening.